Is Senate Fall 2822, Senator Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, at least some members. This bill that we have in front of us came about because of the Office of the Legislative Auditor's report. A number of us have obviously been talking with each other about it. We have a lot to be proud of in this state of our systems. And so I want to make sure I say that so that nobody is confused with what I think many of us would like to see accomplished here. We also have changing demographics. We have a very large system. And I think some of you may recall when we started talking about the issue of transferability and our system, when we were talking about the Legislative Auditor's Report, is that one of the core reasons why we brought the colleges and the universities together was to make sure that there would be more ease and transferability. And there's been a lot of progress made. But our son Nate was 7 when MNSCU was created, and he's now a second semester senior. And there's a part of me that says, okay, so if 15 years isn't enough, is 20 years enough? So several of us have been talking about this issue, and this bill is drafted to align with the issues or the comments suggested in the report. So a couple things. MNSCU, as we all know, the enrollment is increasing. More students will be entering two-year community colleges with plans to transfer to four-year schools. For example, St. Cloud State is expecting to see an enrollment bump in 1 to 2 years as the university receives transfer students. Students are investing their time and resources toward a new career. The state should reduce the hurdles towards this goal. This is an investment in our state and our future. The faster students graduate, the faster they join the workforce. Now, what does the bill do? As I said, we worked with recommendations of the legislative auditor, and Mr. Alter is here to speak if there's any questions.
Senator Clark, would you like the A2 amendment?
Yes, I was just actually about to say that, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. Let's pass out the A2 amendment. Oh, we
and
have
Madam,
it. Okay,
Madam
we
Chair,
have
is that being passed out?
Actually, we do have it.
You do have it. Good. Okay, then I move the A2 amendment.
The A2 amendment is an author's amendment. We don't quite have a quorum yet, so why don't you just continue with your explanation? But at least we know we're working off the A2 amendment.
That sounds good. The goal is obviously to allow students to transfer credits seamlessly. It also allows faculty to have some belief that when a student is coming and they have transferred credits, that they have actually had the core competencies that they would have believed would have occurred before the student came in for the next class. It improves communication among students, faculty, campuses, and the central office. It aligns curriculums between the campuses, and it's really important I say this, especially because I've got some good people from my campus here, that the intent is about what we'd like to see happen, which is transferring, not how. We are not the experts on curriculum or on content, and it's very important that our faculty are the ones that are making the decision about what's included in any given course and that they're the ones that are working this out. But it does mean that if a student's taken English 101 at one place, that it should have the core competencies that everyone could agree would be in there. Again, not for us to decide, but for them. We're trying to make sure that also that the information is easily accessible on the internet. We worked with the central office and a number of other folks about what might make sense. So the A2 amendment includes some changes that were suggested. My understanding is a couple of the things that are in here MNSCU is already working on, and that this would be a way for us to be able to have a better idea, more clarity and transparency as we are moving forward. It also requires a report of the credit activities by February 2011 and annually through 2015, so that, frankly, at least by 2015, parents and students and others would actually know what is being able to be transferred. Now, I did tell a few of you, Madam Chair, as we're waiting for some of the other folks to come in, I was at church on Sunday, and several faculty who go to our church, we ended up having a conversation of everything from whether MNSCU should exist to, among other things, I know that will surprise you, to other things. We talked a lot about what's happened in a very positive way and about how important it is for faculty to be able to be making decisions and how tricky this issue can be. But we also spent some time talking about that whether you're a parent or you're the student, or you're a prospective employer, or you're a faculty member, you should actually have a clue about what's happening. And that really, I think, for many of us that were hearing the report, is we just want to help speed this along. And I'm confident it won't take 5 years for us to get this done, that really we're really getting pretty close.
Great. Thank you, Senator Clark. Should we hear from your witnesses?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Then if Linda Baer and Monty Butte, if you want to come up together. Nancy is going to do it? Nancy and Anne-Marie. Okay, let's start with Linda Baer, and then why don't we hold then, since there are three of you.
And again, Madam Chair.
Is your testimony together or different?
Madam Chair, we have many people who are interested in communicating their thoughts about this.
Okay, all right. Well, let's.
And Madam Chair, I would guess, too, that again, part of the reason why I'm trying to make sure that I'm saying certain things up front is we have a great system. We can continue to make improvements, and I think that the good news is that we've got some ideas about how to do that without impeding MNSCU's ability and the individual campus's ability to do their job.
Let the record show that we do now have a quorum, and Senator Clark moves the A2 amendment as an author's amendment. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Clark and Vice Chancellor Baer.
For the record, I'm Dr. Linda Baer, the Senior Vice Chancellor for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and I am today speaking about transfer. Our board takes the findings of the Office of the Legislative Auditor report seriously, very seriously. While the number of students transferring and the percent of credits successfully transferring has increased significantly, we know we can and must do better. The number of students transferring credits from one system institution to another increased by 52% between fiscal years 1999 and 2008. The proportion of new students transferring in credits increased from 20 to 24% between fiscal years 1999 to 2008. And the number of credits accepted by a system college or university from another system institution increased by 66% between those fiscal years 1999 to 2008. So these are some facts to show you some of the trend lines. Transfer is a priority item for the board, the chancellor, and for academic and student affairs. Prior to the Office of the Legislative Auditor report, staff in the academic student affairs division has been working with the student associations to identify and address transfer concerns. As part of the fact finding last fall before the OLA report, we joined with the student associations to develop a survey of students with transfer experiences. This semester, the survey was emailed to 10,000 students and about 11% responded. The survey was just closed a week ago. Initial data from the survey was shared with a student work group last Friday and is going to be used to inform the system office of ways to improve transfer. We will share this with the campuses. We have proposed board policy that is moving through the process, which includes extensive consultation with our institutions, faculty, staff, and students. It is scheduled for a first reading at the April Board of Trustees meeting. We believe our proposed policy will go a long way to improve transfer for students. Improvements have been made to the MinnesotaTransfer.org website to make it more user-friendly and easy to follow. And information has been communicated to system colleges and universities to improve the transfer information on their website. Much of what we're hearing today is that students need to have better and more accurate communication about transfer, and this website is one of those ways of doing that. The system has recently added links for course outlines and course descriptions to the MinTransfer.org website that will be populated with links from each of the system colleges and university websites. So it's a direct linkage from what's already posted on the campuses, again, to provide more information for students. Information is provided in USelect and transfer guides as well as DARS, and these are automated systems that help us in degree audit record systems and also course applicability. They are the backbone that will make transfer work more easily and more often. USelect is a tool that helps students understand how their courses will transfer. In Minnesota, the Minnesota State Colleges, Universities, and the University of Minnesota participate, but private and out-of-state colleges and universities do as well. We need to identify and review the facts. Then we can determine where the problems are and address resolutions for those problems. We believe the student survey will go a long way to get the facts. Other facts we do know include Transfer occurs in all directions, not just from a college to a university. Most students are transferring also from 2 to 2 year, from 4 year universities to 2 year, and from 4 year to 4 year colleges and universities. More students are attending multiple institutions at the same time, particularly with the advent of online courses. The increase in the number of students and the different ways students transfer creates more complexity for us to find more facts about. If the legislation determines that this will be passed, we will certainly work with it. We appreciate the Senate, that Senator Clark has been open to our concerns and our efforts to improve services to students. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And are there any questions for Dr. Baer?
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Wieger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Dr. Baer, you mentioned transferability among various entities. How about for the military? We've had discussion in the past on this, but you didn't include that in your recent example. I know there's Department of Veteran Affairs reps at MNSCU colleges to facilitate and for various issues. But on the transferability, is that an issue at this point, as we have in here, and you know, should we include this as well? And thinking primarily of the, you know, of the military occupational classification that the person had and training, and usually that's going to translate to X amount of credits. There had been a concern at one point that it may not been as reasonable as it should. An update and whether there's a ramification here.
Although the bill is only relating to internal MNSCU transfers, I think the issue of transfers from private colleges or career colleges or military experience or colleges might also be an interest. And I don't know, Dr. Baer, if you want to comment on that.
Chair Pappas and Senator Wieger, to begin with, we have been leaders, in fact, in improving the credit for prior experience with military. While there are MOCs, military occupational classification, the issue has gone farther than that. And so if you would say that someone was a medic in the military and want to be an EMT, we have been in very deep conversations with the EMT Association, with our campuses, and with the military to say, let's figure out exactly what kind of experience was accomplished in a battlefield situation or in the kind of training that happened for a medic. And then let's do give adequate training for that person so that they can continue to successfully move forward. We've also included the Ambulance Association so that internships and additional opportunities for veterans can be made available. We are moving that same discussion further now from truck driving to truck driving and some of the others where we can find parallel. We're working very hard on that and, in fact, have been national leaders in continuing to open up more of the credit for prior learning for veterans.
And then in terms of what credits you accept from private or career colleges, is there kind of a MNSCU policy on that, or is it up to individual colleges?
Chair Pappas, actually, we have our policy on transfer, and it does include career colleges. We worked on that and said they can go through the same process our other internal colleges or universities go through in terms of articulation, and so no longer can a campus just say, well, it's a for-profit career college. We don't accept their credits. We do expect and mandate that it is accredited. So where those colleges are accredited and where they can show transferability, then we accept those courses.
Okay. I've heard on the grapevine that we're having, that the big issues in transfers are in accounting and business. Have you heard that? In particular, are you aware of that, or are there particular problems there?
Chair Pappas, that has served as one of our difficult areas, and it has to do with this. When you have a two-year degree in accounting or business, faculty in the business industry, the employers that will be hiring people with a two-year degree, expect that principals and management would be part of the education of those people getting a two-year degree. The difficulty comes that at our universities, those courses are taught at sometimes the junior or senior level, mm-hmm. which then says we aren't going to be able to accept those courses in because we teach them at the junior or senior level. Okay. In addition, there is some discussion and trouble because where our campuses are AACSB, the American Association of College Business Schools, Colleges of Business, require very, very careful assessment of what courses come into a nationally accredited program.
Okay. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Then the next witness, do you want to go come up together? Then just bring one chair forward and the three of you can come up. Oh, I thought Dr. Black was coming up too.
Okay. Madam Chair, while they're coming up, I think the other thing that Dr. Baer and I were just talking about is, you know, clearly there are times, even within an institution, where somebody's changing majors and the credits that may have been for one major obviously don't apply to the other, and we're not talking about that. Or where somebody has failed a class and has not successfully completed, that's also not a transfer issue. And I know that sometimes, you know, part of this is just clarifying what is it that we're actually talking about. And my guess is that our next two testifiers will have thoughts about some of that.
Okay. Who's going to start?
Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Anne-Marie Ryan Guest, MSCF representative and vice president. Senator Pappas, Senator Clark, members of the committee, MSCF has long been an advocate in solving the transfer problem within MNSCU. And with the current bill in front of us, we have strength or support behind it with a few friendly suggestions in terms of changes that we'd like to see. In A2, line 1.12, if we could remove or consider removing the language that says without limitation, as that was very vague to us and we weren't quite sure what the meaning or understanding was of that language. So if that would be considered. The other thought for consideration is in line 1.13, adding the words communication of in front of alignment of institution curriculum. And we thought that that was probably the greater problem that exists among the institutions in the system, is the lack of communication that exists in getting information out to students and to faculty members so that they can properly advise students in terms of transfer and transferability of their courses. As long as this doesn't cross the lines of academic integrity, rigor, and accountability, we do support the bill in front of us. The other concern that Senator Clark alluded to before I started testifying is that we believe that there's a perception problem. And the perception problem comes from students who maybe start in a graphic design program and then change their major to art history and are hoping that all of the credits that they took in the graphic design program will somehow fit into an art history program. And that's where we believe most of the transfer problems come from. Even though all their credits would be accepted as elective, they wouldn't fit nice and neat into a major program.
Thank you. Okay, did you want to address, why don't we hear from Dr. Butte?
I'm Monty Butte, professor of sociology at Metropolitan State University.
Are you a professor or a doctor?
You know, I'd never bother with that along the way.
Professor Butte.
I spent a number of years as the chairman of the General Education Committee at the university, and I spent 4 years on the MNSCU Transfer Oversight Committee. I'm testifying on behalf of the interfaculty organization, and we are supportive of this. We have been very strongly committed to making transfer as smooth as possible. One of the concerns I think that's raised with some of the issues of this bill is truly getting a full understanding of what's at stake and the magnitude. I pulled out, sometimes it's often assumed that many of these problems are with the state universities, people coming from technical colleges and community colleges. In fact, 2006-2007, very similar numbers, we accepted 97% of the credits that were sent to us from community colleges. The combined community and technical colleges, we accepted 91%. From technical colleges, it went down to 65% because you all understand the difference there. There are courses there that do not fit very well. But other state universities, we took 95% of the credits that were transferred to us. Overall, we accepted 90% of credits. And we're talking about over a quarter million credits during this period of time. So I just wanted to give you a sense of the magnitude of the issue and how, in many ways, very successfully, we're grappling with this. There are problems, and there are serious problems that still need to be worked out. Two significant points. We worked hard for general education. It is an absolute guarantee that any course you take at any one of the 32 institutions, if it fulfills the requirement at that institution, it must be accepted at the receiving institution. So there is absolutely no way on general education that anyone can be denied the work that they have pursued. Now, the difficulty comes when you reach the point of moving into four-year curricula. Here, you have people transferring credits. The problem generally isn't that transfer credits aren't accepted, but they might not be accepted exactly for what you want them accepted for. You may get credit for your credits, but they may not fit this particular program. Now, the kind of work we've put in, I'll give you the example of my department. We are the social science department. We have five disciplines. A year and a half ago, we sat down in every course in our curriculum, we found the equivalency of every other course in the other 31 institutions. There is a complete match. The problem is not a problem of alignment. We have done a masterful job of showing very clearly what courses align with other courses between the 32 institutions. The difficulty is far more an issue of communication and to make this user-friendly for students. And at this point, it is not as user-friendly as it could be. And there are, of course, always going to be glitches and problems. Now, the one issue in the bill that I think the MNSCU central office staff agreed and both faculty association agreed that we had a concern with being in here legislatively was lines 116 through 120.
You're talking about on the amendment or the original bill?
On the A2.
The A2 amendment, okay.
The yes, and MNSCU has changed their mind on that issue. But here is the difficulty. What students really need is clearly to understand that Anthropology 102 at Minneapolis Community and Technical College is the equivalent and will transfer for Anthropology 108 at Metro State. Very few students need the information of course descriptions and outlines. In the future, that's a wonderful thing. But what they really need is just a simple matchup. So it's click, click, click. There's a few cases where you need these outlines, but let me tell you, folks, let's look at the elephant in the room. You have just passed funding under pressure to hold MNSCU to the budgetary amount of money we had in FY 2006. We now have 49,000 more student headcount today than we had 2006. Please understand how stripped bare we are and how desperately stretched we are. Mankato is not filling 82 faculty positions. This is how desperate it is. Metro State has vital positions that are unfilled. So please do not legislatively. This is an area where we all need to go in the same direction. But let me tell you, I, in 30 years in academic work, have never dealt with an issue as academically and administratively complex as this is. It is unbelievable. And let me be honest with you. This is an area that legislative micromanagement is not helping the issue. But what we do need is kicking the can down the road. And I think your reporting requirements in here and demanding accountability right down the line is really important. But what this amendment does is demand additional manpower and the expenditures of huge amount of money to get something up and running that has very little payoff. Let's get what we got working at a primo level. That's what we need right now. So I really suggest that be taken out, because I think the rest of the bill, with some tiny modifications, really sends a message to everybody. It sends a positive message to students. Metro State's policy is anything we do must hold students harmless. That comes from the president all the way down to the lowest AFSCME worker. And whenever there is a question, students should get the benefit of the doubt. And that is the premise we should operate on. But it always, in working these things out, is not a simple matter. It is very tough, and it takes everybody working together. But realize the constraint we're in because of what's happened budgetarily in this state the last 5 years. We can't take much more. We are at a breaking point.
Thank you, Mr. Butte. Senator Clark, that language was not in the original bill.
And,
I think it was something
that
was suggested by Minskew.
It was, and they're in the process of doing it. And so I've talked to a number of members about it who believe that that's an important part of this. Just a couple of things. And, Professor, I don't know if you were planning on passing this out.
Yes, I am.
But I think one of the things that's important is that when we look at the credits accepted in transfer and receiving by sector, we definitely have got challenges in different parts of it, whether the community and technical colleges are accepting at the same rate as the universities. And this is a whole system. So I think we just need to remember the report was about the whole system, not about any particular university or other institution. And I think all of us on this committee would agree that we believe that our institutions, and I would argue our students and our parents, are overly stretched. If we're serious about being competitive globally, higher education is clearly very important. But I also know that one of the things that surprised me, and I believe that other members as well, is there's, you know, we have a fair amount of people working in the central office, certainly people working in the institutions. There is not the focus on this. This is a core function. And if we're saying that we're having a system, I don't think this is the adding on. Perhaps other things need to be taken away to make sure this is working right. And one of the examples that I heard at our coffee hour at church was about one institution on a particular chemistry class, whether or not that could be transferred to another one. It has the same name. They both feel strongly about what they are. But there is a difference between them, and it's important. It's not just, I don't believe it's just a communications issue. I believe it really is partially about alignment, especially as we look at what's being accepted between the 2 years. And I personally have the utmost confidence that both the central office, the institutions, the faculty, and others really have been working on this challenge. But we do have an accountability issue here back to the taxpayers, as well as to our students and our parents and the faculty. And so I don't think that that you should take this as any attempt to micromanage both the degree audit and reporting system on lines 1.6 to 1.9 and the components that was added in 1.7 to 1.20 did come from the central office and were enhancements that, in talking again with members of this committee, that they thought were good ones and could help the public better understand what's going on. Madam Chair, perhaps Mr. Fuller could address the without limitation because we had been working on that. That was in the initial draft, and as I've told several people, we'll have some time along the way if we I think if we just take it out, we have a different problem. So perhaps if we need to clarify more.
Well, Mr. Fuller.
Madam Chair, members, yes, the language on 1.12 without limitation is a standard legislative language. That means that the list that follows can be added to. So what it means is that the system, so we're talking about what the system should have. And so it was thought that that shouldn't be exclusive to some other things that the Minskew thought would be good to also have in their transfer program system. So that's the reason for without limitation. It means that the following 1 through 7, the system can add to that and still be in compliance with the law.
So, Madam Chair,
yes, Senator Clark.
My understanding, and I can see why some might be concerned, this wasn't about that no matter what classes are out there that they have to be able to transfer without any limitation, which is clearly not what we want to see, that it really is more about the list, that the list can be modified should the institutions and the system decide.
And Senator Clark, what did you think about the adding of the language under number 1?
I think that it is actually a part of it, that if we only said communication, it would be diminishing some of the challenges we're seeing between some of the 2 years, for example. So I have to admit, at this point, I would not add that in, because I think that is only part of the challenge, not so much as Professor Butte said at the 4 years, but what we've heard and what I certainly believe the legislative auditor's report was talking about was more than just a communication issue. I'm also confident, though, that they're going to be able to come back and say, here's success and victory, that we're almost there. But I would hate to see us, given what I've heard both from members and what's in the report, that we only have this focused on as communication.
Then also under number four, Professor Butte's comment about maybe this is too much for them to put on the course descriptions and the course outlines, that should we think about having a little less information than that? That might be too much work.
Again, Madam Chair, that came from the central office, and they believe the board could do that anyways. They were,
I heard a whisper that they changed their mind.
Well, no, I also had another whisper that the board, that this is something. I'll be honest with you. This is something that I think was a good addition, and we were trying to clarify. We had the way this went is we had a draft that we thought was aligned with the report. And I think there were some concerns, and there was some suggested language that seemed, in technical terms, a little squishy. And then there was another attempt to provide some clarification. And I think that, you know, part of this is about a win both for the system, when they can come back and say, hey, look, we did this. But I will also say, for those of us, and I know a number of us are parents, that we're the ones that often help students with figuring out their transferability. This is something that actually, to me, seem to enhance it, that it really is about showing the transparency and, frankly, going back to the students of, hey, you should have expected this. It was out there plainly.
Professor Butte.
My point wasn't that the interfaculty organization opposes 1.17 through 1.20. I think in time that needs to be done. The point I was making is that there is more work than needed in the area of 0.1.6 through 1.11. That is where we should be concentrating our firepower right now, is to make sure the degree auditing and reporting system and the U.S. Select database is absolutely perfected and is put together in a way that is just absolutely transparent to parents and children. And so my point is there's still plenty of work to be done there. And with the kind of limited resources, I'm afraid sometimes we get diverted from getting down and dirty and getting all the kinks out of this, which is going to serve far more the needs of far more students, where I think that the course descriptions and course outlines are going to come up occasionally and will be useful. But for every student, that first part is what's essential. So that was my point.
Professor Butte, Mr. Fuller points out that there is a 5-year phase-in on line 1.34. So we're not expecting this to be done overnight, and there's no penalty, and it'll just be a, you know, we'll check in occasionally. It's good that we checked in after 15 years and see how this is going.
And Madam Chair, that's what I was going to say, Professor Butte, is at one point it was suggested we put 2 years in here, that really, geez, after 15 years you'd think we'd have this figured out, and with the technology, but I know how hard technology is, that we could have done it. But, you know, now if I had any more kids, they could have been all the way through college and then some before this requirement would come in. And at some point we have to remember that these are students' lives that we're talking about, and that as challenging as it is, that this isn't the hard part. The hard part's what you were really talking about, the hard work that you do between your members and different institutions. That's really, to me, what the hard part is. Posting it on the website isn't.
Okay, we have two more students who wanted to testify.
Thank you.
Senator Erickson Ropes. Wait, before you go, Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just wanted to thank Senator Clark for bringing the bill. And I just wanted to echo my support for number four. We kind of moved past that just right now. But again, as a transfer student myself, back in the dinosaur era, and as a parent of a student in college now, I think it really is important to be looking at something on the internet where parents and students will be able to find information and get this information accurately and quickly. And it may be a lower priority in terms of the whole system reform, but I think it's really an important thing to keep focused on. And actually, someday I hope, Senator Clark, that we might even be looking at credit transferability between the university and the Minsky system, and possibly even the private sector.
I was a transfer student to MinSCU, and my university courses did transfer. So I assume you're talking about the other direction. But I also had a lot of, I got a lot of credit for life experience that I was able to document when I went to MinSCU, to Metro State.
That's great.
Madam Chair?
Yes, Senator Lance.
2 points. First of all, my mom got her degree from Metro State, and she used a lot of her life experience to get credit for that, too. That's certainly valuable. Second point, I have one constituent that told me that she had been advised by the University of Minnesota to take her Spanish class at Metro State, but then when she tried to transfer it to the University of Minnesota, she ran into problems. So certainly at some point that needs to be considered as well, as you suggested.
So that may be your next bill, Senator Clark, transferability to the U.
One other point I wanted to make had to do with the communication question. I understand the way it was proposed to be amended might be limiting, but I want to throw something else out just for consideration. On line 1.13, where it says alignment of institution curriculum, you could insert after that words to the effect of and its communication to stakeholders. Then you accomplish the communication piece, but you're not limiting the
Madam Chair, that would certainly, if that's a helpful clarification, that would go along with what the purpose is here.
The stakeholders, is that right?
Probably there's a different word than stakeholders.
But wasn't sure if students would be too limiting.
It might be too limiting. Yeah. So maybe we just need to think as we're talking about what the right word. Well, my joke also has been, as the son I was talking about, I think that he could make a lot of money right now on helping others learn how to transfer. But I don't think you should have to, because we've been transferring between international programs and all of those other things. But if we are able to, as a system, make it easier, not just we want the rigor. I mean, this is really, though, about our students understanding what it is that they're purchasing and employers and professors being able to understand that it's apples to apples. And I know how much work that you've been doing on this.
And where I think you make a great point. One of the concerns with this is sometimes a student is very frustrated because they took law for a legal assistance. And then they're very upset because we will not accept it as an equivalent for constitutional law. We will accept it for credit, but not for that equivalency. And it's sometimes difficult to communicate to the student that we're talking about apples and oranges here.
Senator Latz moves that on line 1.13 before the semicolon, insert, and its communication to stakeholders.
There was a better word for stakeholders, Madam Chair. I'm open to it. I just didn't want to limit it to students only. I thought more people.
And Madam Chair,
Mr. Fuller thinks that's fine.
It's a friendly
Senator Clark.
Friendly amendment.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sharon.
Mr. Butte. Thank you, Senator Pappas. Mr. Butte, do you think the just in reflection on what you just said about the difficulty in helping communicate to students those two different courses that have some legal component to it don't transfer because they don't, do you think that this language, each system, college and university shall post course descriptions, will help the student understand why that doesn't transfer?
Dr. Butte. Professor Butte.
It potentially it could, but most students aren't going to come and look at that detail. Usually that's more the role of an advisor who will literally sit down face-to-face, a faculty advisor, and try to work that through. But sometimes even then it's tough. I think what happens is that students may take something and then after the fact want certain things to happen. The difficulty is if a student is looking at these equivalencies on DARS before they take courses, and that calls for a lot of proactivity, you will know if it's going to transfer or not. But what we're caught in with transfer, many students have taken Metro State, 95% of our students are transfer students. Our president just did an audit. Those 95% average 4 transcripts from 4 different schools they bring to us. They get to that point, and they've taken things all over, and so they may have changed course many times, and our hearts bleed for them, but there wasn't a lot of foresight, and so they're caught in a bind. And so it would help explain it, but much more so this first part in 1.7 through 1.10. If students were able to go online and see these equivalencies very straightforward and they were being directed there and it was transparent and user-friendly, they would avoid mistakes. And that's what we hope to have happen. everybody isn't like Sandy and I going around the circle several times before our BAs. And
then follow-up question.
We have a follow-up question, Senator Sharon.
And then Senator Hemsworth. And then for Senator Clark, on that point, that if the courses are clearly aligned, the course numbers are shown to be equivalency courses, 102 to 108 at Winona State is 108, and Minnesota State, Mankato is 102, and that those are transferable courses without course descriptions and course outlines. Doesn't that meet the objective of transferability and increasing the communication and the ability of the student to understand ahead of time the transferability without this language? Doesn't that still stay in place?
Senator Clark.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, again, this language in both places came from MNSCU, and it's something that they're in the process of doing. And from a purchaser of the educational opportunity, it's something that will help clarify what actually is in there. And, you know, we see this in a number of places. An example I've been giving is at St. Cloud State, there's a citizenship and democracy class that all people take, and every professor has a slightly different lens in which they do it. But that also can help provide better information to the students about what it is that they are getting. Again, if this is something that I think they're hoping to be able to show and measure and that they are slightly different things, and aside from the fact that the language would actually be in here, I'm not hearing huge objections to it. It's just a matter of timing. So,
okay, members, we need to move on. We have a student who would like to testify,
Chair.
Michael Jamnick, Senator Tomasoni.
One quick comment, because when I saw this, each college system and university shall post course descriptions and course outlines, it seemed to me that they probably already did that. So I went to the St. Cloud State website, and it does say course descriptions on here. So I'm just wondering if these things are already online and they can just be used to make this more friendly to find out if they're transferable. And I would think aren't all the colleges having course descriptions online already? So it's not something that hasn't already been done.
Senator Thomas,
I can click on course descriptions and see what it says. You know.
Yeah, Madam Chair, the goal is for a system is that we're having some system-wide ways of doing some things as opposed to some institutions doing things one way and others doing it another.
Okay, I would really like to move on and hear from Michael Jamnick, who has got your letters here, and Tyler Smith from MSCSA.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Just please introduce yourself.
For the record, I'm Michael Jamnick, the Student Association President at St. Cloud State University. Senator Pappas, members of the committee, good afternoon. I would like to make a few comments regarding the proposed legislation that addresses credit transfer. The Minnesota State University Student Association and the Minnesota State College Association have been looking at this issue for some time and recently worked with the Office of the Chancellor to survey transfer students about their experiences. As Vice Chancellor Baer said, the data from the survey is being analyzed, and we believe the system has been very responsive in its willingness to look at this issue. The student associations look forward to sharing that data publicly as we are able to draw conclusions from it and make recommendations for future work. I transferred from Vermilion Community College to St. Cloud State University in 2005. I spent 1 year at VCC and did not complete a degree, so I had to transfer my credits to St. Cloud. Overall, my transfer experience was positive. However, there was a difference in requirements for freshman-level English classes between Vermilion, which require 2 4-credit courses, and St. Cloud State, which only requires one. For me, that meant extra tuition paid and time spent on a course that I didn't need to take. As you're all familiar with, college is expensive, and it is important that students have access to information and advising that will allow them to make the best decisions possible when considering transfer. It is also important that our system continue to evaluate how better to serve these students and that we are able to identify the steps that can be taken to increase student success and progress towards a degree. Overall, a great deal of progress has been made with regard to credit transfer within the system, and work continues to be done on this issue. However, we are working to identify specific problems that still exist and create barriers for students who transfer into a state college or university. We look forward to working with the system to address these issues. In the meantime, we are supportive of this legislation proposed, which encourages continued work and conversation about the credit transfer for students. This legislation is a good first step in addressing concerns that we as students have. We believe that this bill can help set the foundation for future discussions, that we will have going forward with faculty, our institutions, with the Office of the Chancellor, and the Board of Trustees. Again, we'd like to thank Senator Clark and members of this committee for helping move this process forward. And thank you for the opportunity to speak today. I will field any questions you'll have.
Mr. Jamnick, I want you to not feel so bad, because I think your instructors at St. Cloud State are going to very much appreciate that you have that extra semester in writing, because you're going to be a much stronger writer and you're going to get better grades. I know I appreciate it as an instructor when my students are good writers.
Thank you.
No, it's not always. You know, unless you were reading novels, then that's fun too.
Yeah,
but it was probably a writing course.
Not reading and writing.
Reading
so.
And writing, yeah. Great. Any questions? Okay, Mr. Smith.
Thank you, Chair Pappas and Senators. My name is Tyler Smith, the president of the Minnesota State College Student Association, representing students at MinSCU's two-year colleges. I speak today in support of the proposal before you. Transfer is an issue that may never be solved for all students. The challenge has persisted for decades. However, this issue is too important to simply perpetuate the status quo and ignore the need for continuous improvement. Transfer is complex. It involves balancing the curricular needs of faculty, quality educational outcomes, and unique programs against student and state desires for minimal credit loss and direct pathways for degree completion. The state cannot afford to allow stagnation in credit transfer. The focus must be on continuous improvement to remain competitive in the higher education landscape. Transfer speaks to effectively serving the diverse and changing population in Minnesota. Seamless transfer affects low-income, first-generation, and students of color most of all, as they constitute a significant portion of two-year college attendees. With well-established but flexible pathways for credit transfer, low-income Minnesotans can access college, stay in college, transfer on within public higher education system, and graduate as quickly as possible with job-ready skills. The promotion of seamless transfer saves money. Students save money as they pay only for the classes they need and only pay for them once. They also save the costs associated with deferred graduation, including both additional tuition dollars and their delayed entrance or return to the state's workforce. These cost savings are significant, as our two-year students are already paying the second highest tuition rate in the country. The state also saves money when transfer is consistent and uncomplicated. Although the state no longer appropriates two-thirds of the cost of public higher education in Minnesota, taxpayers are still on the hook for around 50% of this cost. When students stay in school for long periods, the state loses out on additional tax revenue. If students can graduate in fewer semesters with fewer credits, the state saves money. Our students support the legislation before you, as it will result in initiatives at the system level that could pare down the complexity of the transfer system. If there is one takeaway from our students' work on transfer and from the observations in the recent Office of the Legislative Auditor's report on the system office, is that the current transfer system is too complicated. Transfer works well for students, but only if they navigate the current transfer system perfectly from the beginning of their academic career. The OLA report illustrates the current complexity of transfer and how it is unsatisfactory. In 2000, the OLA asked presidents if the merger had improved transferability between two-year and four-year institutions. At that time, 71% of presidents said yes. However, when asked in 2009 if the central office had developed effective, efficient mechanisms for credit transfer, only 50% of presidents said yes. We appreciate the committee's interest in this crucial issue and the Board of Trustees' willingness to work with students. Our students are fortunate to enjoy a strong and trusting relationship with the board and the chancellor's office. And we have every confidence that the system will take this opportunity and direction this legislation provides to take decisive action on all the proposed goals. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there any questions? Then, members, what we're doing is we are actually passing out an omnibus policy bill today, and that's going to be Senate File 184. So Senator Clark has requested a dual track. So we'll be taking her bill up for passage to the floor, and then we'll also be considering it for inclusion in Senate File 184 at the end of the agenda. And also the OHE policy bill is also going of Senate File 3011, which is coming up on the agenda, will also be offered for inclusion in Senate File 184. Okay, with that, then I'd like to wrap up, if possible. Senator Wieger?
Madam Chair, just clarification, and Minsky has waived any fiscal note obligation on this if it goes exclusively policy?
We have not received a fiscal note on this. Okay. And Senator Clark, do you want to make the motion? Do you want me to make the motion?
I believe we've got a dual motion, right?
Just make one motion now to send it to the floor.
Okay. Move that we send Senate File 2822 to the floor.
Senator Clark moves that Senate File 2822 be recommended to pass. All those in...
As amended.
Oh, as amended. Thank you very much. As amended. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Clark. Now we have a short presentation on the Minnesota Homegrown Initiative, and some language related to this initiative is going to be included in what's coming up as an A5 amendment. But I did want to invite Leslie Bowman from the U of M and William Harvey from Minnesota State University Mankato to the table. Some of you may have been at the Food Caucus meeting last week, and I said at that meeting that I would explore whether our state colleges and universities actually have a purchase Minnesota products policy, and like we do with state agencies. So we've invited some people forward to talk about what they're doing now, and then, as I mentioned, that language is coming up in the A5 amendment. And the language simply says, I'll just tell you right now, colleges and universities, and this is Minsky only, must make a reasonable attempt to identify and purchase food products that are grown within the state. Okay, welcome to the committee. And are you Leslie?
I am Leslie.
All right, why don't you go ahead?
Thank you, Senator Pappas and other senators. I'm Leslie Bowman, Executive Director of Contract Administration at the University of Minnesota. And I'm here just to speak a little bit about what we are doing currently in regards to local food procurement. We started in 2003 and met with many different committees throughout the state to talk about how the university might improve their local food procurement. And a number of the committees that we met with were the Southeast Regional Development Partnership, the College of Agriculture, Food, and Environmental Sciences, Minnesota Extension, Natural Resources, Experiment in Rural Cooperation, the Minnesota Project, Cisco, Minnesota, and Cisco National, Pepin Heights Orchards, University of Minnesota Morris, Pride of the Prairie, the Land Stewardship Project, and many local chefs and restaurants. So many, many of us gathered in 2003 to just begin to discuss this topic and what the university could do to improve their local procurement. And from those many different brainstorming entities and brainstorming sessions, we came up with a plan in collaboration with Cisco Minnesota. Cisco Minnesota is the primary food distributor that distributes food to the University of Minnesota, and we've worked in partnership with them to improve the number of local products that they bring into their warehouse that we can then use on campus. One of the things we discovered in the brainstorming sessions was that many of the cooperatives, smaller farmers, and smaller entities from outstate Minnesota had a challenge in bringing their products to the Twin Cities or distributing those products. And Cisco Minnesota applied for a grant, which they then received, and they worked on a program, what they call truck backs. They deliver their products to outstate Minnesota, and rather than bringing those empty trucks back to their warehouse in Blaine, they bring products from local cooperatives and smaller distributors and bring them back to Cisco, Minnesota, so that they can make that a more efficient way of getting the products across the state. What University of Minnesota has done, because we're such a large buyer, often it's challenging for any one small supplier to be able to supply the volume that we need for residential dining or catering or retail on campus. So Cisco's developed a program whereby they bring in as many of the local products as they can, and we've developed a set of specifications so that the first fill from Cisco would be local products. So, for instance, if we ordered 20 cases of tomatoes on a given day, Cisco would first go to the warehouse, determine how many cases of local tomatoes they had in the warehouse. If they had more than 20, then all of the cases that we got would be local. If they only had 10, the first 10 would be local, and the second 10 would be from products out of the state of Minnesota are not considered local. That's worked very well for us in produce and also as well in a lot of the meat products that we purchase. So, again, if we're going to order 4-ounce chicken breasts, first they'll fill that order with Golden Plump, and if they don't have enough of that particular local product in the warehouse, then they'll look at the specifications and fill it with products that might not be local. So for us, this translates into being able to use a lot of local products on campus. We also order a lot of dairy products from Organic Valley, from Land O'Lakes. We do eggs from Michael's Foods, which, again, are local products. Cider from Pepin Heights. City Kid Java Coffee, which is out of northeast Minneapolis. So we order many, many products that are local. When we recently bid our dining services on campus, which was in 2007, we put language into the RFP that said that any vendor that would be successful in getting the contract on the Twin Cities as well as the coordinate campuses needed to be willing to work with and provide local foods. Aramark is the provider on the Twin Cities campus, and Sodexo is the provider on Crookston and Morris campus, and they all agreed to procure local food products and increase that usage every year that they have the contract on campus. One of the other things that was kind of nice with our new contract is there had been a challenge with our vendors being able to purchase and resell University of Minnesota products. So we were able to get that into our contract, and now dining services on campus serves the meat that's produced in the meat lab on the St. Paul campus, many dairy products, ice cream and cheeses that are produced in the food science and nutrition lab.
Honeycrisp apples.
We actually do the food service on the Arboretum, and so we use not only the apples but also any of the produce that they grow on the grounds. We incorporate that into salads and muffins and soups and those kinds of things. So I think that we're doing a great job of using local products, and again, every year trying to continue to increase that usage.
Thank you, Ms. Bowman. You're any welcome. Questions? University. Okay, then, Mr. Harvey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is William Harvey, and I am the General Manager of University Dining Services at Minnesota State University Mankato. That's managed by Sodexo Corporation, and wanted to thank the committee for allowing me to come speak today. In 2003, Sodexo established a partnership with a group called the Food Alliance. This is a nonprofit organization based in Portland, Oregon. The Food Alliance is dedicated to promoting and expanding the use of sustainable agricultural products. To accomplish this mission, the Food Alliance operates one of the nation's leading certificate programs for environmental friendly and sustainable products. The Food Alliance to date has certified hundreds of different agricultural products, including fruits, vegetables, wheat, wine, livestock, and dairy. The Food Alliance has an affiliate organization here in St. Paul called the Midwest Food Alliance. Through the Midwest Food Alliance, Sodexo has partnered with them, and we purchase a variety of fruits and vegetables through our vendor partners, Sysco Minnesota, and also Bix Produce, which we use in our residential programs. Also through these vendor partners, Sodexo has become involved with the Minnesota Project and also the Heartland Food Network. At Minnesota State Mankato, we have also started looking at going to using meats, cheeses, and also dairy products from other vendors here within the state. For our residential program and also our retail and catering programs in our Centennial Student Union. Other campuses that Sodexo represents here in Minnesota are St. Cloud State, Minnesota State University Moorhead, Bethel, and also the University of Minnesota Morris, just to name a few. People ask us why we're looking to do this. And one of the simple reasons is we care. And the other reason is that we listen to our customers and we value what they say and their preferences of looking for healthier alternatives and also ways to control to find locally grown and respect for the environment and also the farm workers in the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And I know I talked to the Bemidji people when they came to my office today, and they talked about their projects on sustainability and you know, not just energy efficiency, but also buying local grown food. So, okay, any questions? All right, I can report back to the Food Caucus that we did our job.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
If we pass the bill. Thank you very much. So did the A5 amendment get passed out? Then, members, I'd like to invite the Office of Higher Education to come forward. I think Ms. Grimes, Mr. Michikanis, because this is mostly your the agency bill, and walk the members through the bill. Ms. Grimes.
Madam Chair, these are items the office came up with in our work on this policy bill. Let's looking for my summary right over there. Thank you. Excuse me. Section 1 of the bill is some language on matching data. The office has data, individual student data on enrollment, and we're looking for permission to match that with individual student data we have in several of our financial aid databases. In the past, when we've done that, we've gotten one-time permission from the legislature to do a particular study, and we're looking for this on an ongoing basis. This helps us do projects such as looking at the persistence of state grant recipients compared to those who don't receive a state grant, and similar kinds of evaluation and policy analysis on our programs.
And this language is also traveling on its own to go to the Judiciary Committee and Data Privacy. And who is carrying that? Am I carrying it? The Data Privacy Provision. I'm carrying it? Okay, thanks. Letting me know. And we have a hearing this week? Thursday. Okay, so we have a hearing Thursday on this in the Judiciary Committee.
Thank you, Senator. Sections 2 and 4 go together. These relate to private institutions when they are eligible to participate in state grants and other state financial aid. This has been something that has been tinkered with repeatedly since 2006. The office's goal is to make it so that students get Pell Grants instead of to replace some of the money they are borrowing. There are currently about 30 small institutions that do not participate in the federal Pell Grant program that do participate in state financial aid. About 10 of those institutions have gone ahead and gotten themselves accredited and begun to participate in the federal programs. About 20 have not. Of those 20 who have not, it is a considerable expense to get accredited and then begin participating in the federal programs. This language is a compromise, frankly, that is designed to grandfather in the existing institutions as long as they do two things. One is that they license with the office, because some of them are licensed, for example, by the Barber Board or the Cosmetology Board, and they are not also licensed with our office currently. That we would license, they would license with our office so that we can examine their administrative and financial capacity, and that they would disclose to students in a disclosure that our office would write that the students could be getting federal financial aid if they went to a different campus. Then the idea is that when the institution eventually changes ownership, at that point in time, the institution would have to begin the process to start participating in federal financial aid. Section 3 is a technical change on satisfactory academic progress. Currently, the state's definition of what students have to do to maintain satisfactory academic progress is nearly identical, but not quite, to the federal definition. And the idea is that that minor difference would go away because we would simply use the federal definition. It's a tiny bit of streamlining for the campuses and the aid administrators. Sections 5 and 6 are technical changes for the Indian Scholarship Program. I'll concentrate on Section 6 if that's acceptable. In Section 6, we are adding language to the statute that puts current practice into statute. Current practice in the Indian Scholarship Program is to award those funds on a first-come, first-served basis, and that's been happening even though it hasn't said so in the statute, and so this would put current practice into statute. Section 7 is about achieved scholarships, and it is changing the reference to the federal law. The achieved scholarships are patterned after the federal academic competitiveness grants, which will sunset at the end of the 2010-11 award year, And so we are changing the reference to make sure that it's clear that it's piggybacked on what the requirements were at the time that the law was still in effect. Section 8 is a technical change, putting in references to academic progress in the Achieve Scholarships. Then Section 9 authorizes institutions to apply on behalf of their students for Achieve Scholarships. This was one of the provisions that was controversial this year as the program had an expanded number of recipients. Section 10 defines a complete application because we are looking for language that will allow us to award these on a first-come, first-served basis. And Sections 11 to 13 are rationing language that give the office particular authority with regard to what happens if applications exceed the amount of money available. Sections 14 and 15 are parallel language to the language we talked about when institutions can participate in state grant program in the self-loan program, even though they don't participate in the federal Pell Grant program. It's exactly parallel to what I talked about for the state grant program. Section 16 is a technical change, adding a reference to one of our agency's previous names that helps us when we go to sell bonds. Sections 17 through 25 are all very highly technical amendments to the private institution's registration language. I could go through them one by one if you would like, but I'm not sure if that's exactly how you want to spend your time.
And it's sections what through what? Tell me again, 17?
17 through 25.
I think you should talk about each of them a little bit.
Section 17 is a technical change to include a reference to private out-of-state institutions. It's just a technical change adding the fact that we do need to be watching out for what private institutions are doing that are out-of-state that are offering courses to Minnesota residents in Minnesota.
This says school closure on mine, so it's under the school closure section, Section 17?
I'm sorry, I appear to be off in my section numbers.
Okay, we're on the A5 amendment.
Oh, Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I was going from the original bill.
We seemed like we were following it till
Section
now.
Section 17 is in fact, about school closure. And it defines some of the circumstances that arise when an institution closes. And this is a little bit like something that was described in an earlier bill where without limitation. There may be other circumstances that lead to closure of an institution, but at least we know these listed ones would be covered. Section 18 has to do with an alternative to posting a bond. This is some of the financial security we ask for from institutions to cover students if the institution were to go out of business and we would need to arrange a teach-out and arrange for them to have student transcripts available in the future. Section 19 is a section of powers and duties about what we're trying to do by regulating the private institutions. We've had for a long time similar language to this in Chapter 141, which regulates the non-degree-granting institutions, the ones that simply offer diplomas and certificates. This would have parallel language to that that would be for the licensed institutions, those that are degree granting, offer associate's degrees, bachelor's degrees, and more. Section 20 is a technical change on tuition refunds.
21,
thank you. The language is currently in rules, and the proposal is to put it in statute. The next section is a technical change on fire inspections. It removes a reference that had the result of requiring fire marshals to issue inspection certificates for space to be used by institutions. Fire marshals have indicated that such inspections are unnecessary as long as the buildings meet building codes for sanitation, health, and safety.
Okay.
The next section is that has to do with the eligible institutions change that we talked about. Making room for the fact that they would need to be licensed by our office in order to be participating in the financial aid programs. The next section.
Section 24.
removes an obsolete reference to degree-granting schools that was in Chapter 141, and those schools are now regulated in Chapter 136A. Section 25 has to do with removing an obsolete reference to clarify that new non-degree-granting schools are prohibited from using the words college or university in their names. The only non-degree-granting schools allowed to use those words are the ones that have been using them for some years and have been grandfathered in. Then Section 26, last year when the legislature was adopting language that would provide for a ninth semester of eligibility for the state grant program, they also changed several other programs to some other programs to authorize ninth semesters of eligibility, only it was an oversight. The Safety After Survivor Grant program is a tiny program, and it has actually always, students have been eligible for 10 semesters. They could get the award 1 year and renew it for 4 years, so it was a total of 10 semesters. The intent was not to reduce the number of semesters they were eligible for, so this puts it back to 10 semesters of eligibility.
Okay, any questions? Anybody in the audience want to testify? All right, then, thank you very much, Ms. Grimes. That's straightforward. I think we have to put the A5 move to adopt the amendment. Senator Sharon moves that we adopt the A5 amendment to Senate File 3011. Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Senator Sharon moves that Senate File 3011 be laid on the table. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. We have, do we have 184? Was that passed out? We don't even need it. All right, do we need to delete the language of 184? We have it. So the next motion, Senator Sharon, is we have Senate File 184 before us. That's the vehicle bill, is to delete the language of 184 and insert Senate File 3011 as amended. Delete
motion.
The language of 184 and insert Senate File 3011 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Now we're going to include 2822. Okay, then the next motion, Senator Clark is not with us, but Senator Sharon then moves to include Senate File 2822 into as amended into Senate File 184. Okay. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. So then we have the bill complete before us. Then
Senate File 184.
Sharon moves Senate File 184 as amended, and this can go directly to the floor. Any questions or comments or issues? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Then I believe our work is completed for today, right, Ms. Ryan? And we are not meeting on Thursday, but we will meet next Tuesday. We have an agenda set for then, so you have Thursday off.
Thank you.
Committee is adjourned.